birthday party?
Miracle. There you go.
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast. I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. Like always, Abracadamits, I hope you're getting stuff done, son, meeting them goals. I hope all of you had a fantastic Thanksgiving. I really do. We did. We had a good Thanksgiving right here. We didn't do much, which that's my favorite kind. You know, we just saw our family that lives close by here. You know, Antoinette's mom and sister. And we just kind of, you know, hung out and watched movies and ate. Yes, yes. And yes, I met my carbohydrate requirement. And now I'm ready to go right back onto keto. So, but yeah, it was a good Thanksgiving. We watched some really good movies. We really did. And there's one movie that I have to recommend highly. I really do. We watched A Christmas Story Christmas. And for you guys not familiar with that, that is the latest sequel to the movie that we watch every year. Everyone, you can't escape it. And that's The Christmas Story, which they play 13,000 times a day around Christmas time. And I just got to say, that movie was the perfect sequel. Yeah, it's what we all deserved. It was a fantastic movie. Started off first, I was watching, I was like, you know, well, there's kind of the cheesiness of this is there, but the nostalgia is there too, and I was digging it, but the end is where I realized how brilliant and how good this movie is. So the writers are fantastic; they knew what they were doing, and you can really even think deeper about it. But the movie hits, man. It hits, especially if you've lost a parent. It really hits then. But highly recommend. It's my new favorite Christmas movie. So if you get a chance, definitely check out A Christmas Story Christmas. We also watched the movie Smile, which I thought that was good too. It's a horror movie, and it was good. It was good. And then last night, we watched Nope by Jordan Peele. And which is weird because Nope is what I wish I would have said to Antoinette when she asked me if I wanted to watch it. I thought that was a pile of garbage. Did not enjoy it at all. It was like, I don't know, man. It's like he was trying to be M. Night with this movie, but without the plot twist. Matter of fact, the only twist was me twisting my neck to look at something else because it was just long, drawn out, boring, not scary, hot garbage. But anyways, this isn't a podcast about movies. I just had to get that out there. While I'm thinking of it, I want to give a shout out on some show dates. This is a busy time of year for me. I do a lot of private stuff, a lot of holiday parties. But I am closing out the year with a public show, baby. I'm going to be at Harrah's Cherokee Casino New Year's Eve. So if you are in the area, come out, see me. We're going to bring in the new year. More information about that at DannyWhitsonMagic.com. All right, Abracadamits. Now, today's guest, actually, he is a fantastic magician, very, very good magician. He has been on Fool Us. He's all over the world, man. Hawaii, Magic Castle, constantly going, constantly working. Like I said, funny, talented. And you know what? This guy's also got some charm to him, too. He's got a natural charm. I really enjoy this guy. Very smart dude. So if you will, Abracadamits, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with magician Nathan Comarsh. All right, I'm excited. We got magician Nathan Comarsh here on the podcast today. How you doing, Nathan?
Excited to be here, man.
Awesome. Well, I know, you know, I've already said your name, but if you don't mind, will you go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit to the Abracadam listeners?
Yeah, welcome to Abracadam. My name is Nathan Comarsh. I'm a magician and comedian based here in Orlando, Florida. I've had just a guy doing an after-dinner show, making people laugh, amazing people. Had the privilege of performing in 13 different countries, regularly at the Magic Castle in Hollywood, on Penn & Teller, all kinds of fun stuff there.
Brother, you are, man. You are a very, very busy dude. I thought I was busy, but no, you're super busy. I see you everywhere. Weren't you just recently? Were you in Hawaii? Is that where
you're at? Just finished. Yeah. Just finished 5 months between two different venues, one on the island of Oahu, one on the island of Maui, doing 70-minute parlor shows. Really beautiful place and amazing. But just as you know, so cool to just, you know, do it every night and in the same room, like helps you just refine and polish and massage and just take material to another level. So that was fantastic.
Oh, I bet that was a real cool experience. Now, how long did you say you were over there?
I was over there for about 5 months in total. So I did 10 weeks in the spring and then 12 weeks over the summer. So it's been a good hunk, but I'm grateful to be home for sure.
Well, you know, dude, I've heard this, okay, and I don't tell me if you experienced this, but I hear island fever is a thing that you get sometimes if you're over there too long.
Yeah, I mean, you feel like you really are on a rock 6,000 miles away from everything. And the particular area I was in, I love, absolutely gorgeous, amazing people. But you're also, without a car, you're very much in this like resort area of the island. And so you're kind of stuck in this little corner. So it feels like you're almost like on an island, on an island. So yeah, after a while, but awesome people, great environment, perfect environment to do what we do and just do it at a really high level. So yeah.
That's awesome, brother. Well, I tell you what, man, let's hear it. I want to know, you know, every magician tells their origin story, how they get into magic and what. I'm interested, man, to hear yours. Where did it all start for you, man?
Yeah, man, I was about 11 years old and a buddy of my parents came over and he made a dollar bill levitate on our dinner table. And I went crazy for that. I was like up nights, weeks afterwards, trying to like imagine how that could possibly happen. Like, was it like a little fan that was blowing from inside the bill, or was it, you know? And it was. And so I was absolutely captivated by that and fell in love with it. And it became like something I was really into, but was like almost like my little secret. Like I was kind of in the closet as the magician in high school and a lot of college. And then I got a job during a summer camp in college teaching magic to kids at the summer camp. And it was the first time I did like a formal show. Like I'd done tricks for people, you know, here, there, whatever. But it was the first time doing a formal show. And as you know, there's some nights, whatever level you're at as a performer, like there's some nights when everything just clicks and the gods of, you know, live performance are on your side and you can do no wrong. And it was helped by the fact that these are a bunch of 11-year-olds who'd been looking up to me. Like the first show was like half kids in my cabin were like, that's my counselor. And so it could do no wrong. And he just came out of that room with just this huge endorphin rush. And I realized that performing is what I'm meant to do. And I happen to love magic and I'm very into the magic side of what I do. But I realized equally that like if I'd gotten into writing jokes as a kid, playing a banjo, juggling, whatever, like I'd be doing that. But what I really love and I'm meant to do is just connect with strangers and bring people together and share some energy and some fun and some laughter in the moment with people. So that was big for me. I also happened to be, when I was in college, I lived very close to an amazing performer who in his retirement had set up shop as being a magic shop that catered to professionals. And that was Denny Haney, who was just an incredible character. He was a Vietnam veteran who'd served multiple tours. He'd performed all over the world, had this incredible career, incredible charisma, great classic material. He really understood magic and performing inside and out. So I would travel. Our freshman year, we weren't allowed to have cars on campus. And so I just take public transportation, Baltimore public transportation, 3 hours each way to kind of like sit across the counter from him just like listen. And he would talk for hours, you know, microphone technique. He would talk to me about all these incredible performers who died before I was born and what I was doing and what they did and what made their work special. And so that was kind of like my real education. And then I started performing professionally in 2006. It was when my parents and I both thought I was just like taking a year off between having my my degree and grad school and something else, you know, like law school or whatever. And that year off has been going for 18 years now. It took off as a career, and that's kind of the superhero origin story there.
You know the same thing happened to me. I mean, the way you said that you would take public transit just to go meet with Denny Haney and to learn everything, because your mind was so hungry at the time, you know. And they talk about the magic bug, you know, and it really is a thing that when you catch it, you're obsessed. And
yeah,
I mean, and especially at that age, you know, when magic is so new to us, you know, literally we would climb a mountain to learn something, you know. I mean, it's really, really impressive. You know, I got to tell this story real quick, Nathan, because you brought up the magic gods, and I swear that's a thing. It is absolute a thing. And I got to tell this story why it's on my mind before I forget it. This happened to me this past summer. I was doing a strolling gig and at a party. And you know how sometimes, like, the host of the party will show you off to their friends, the ones that they want to show you off to. They take you around. Show so-and-so this, you know. Well, I was going to go straight basic, and I was going to do card to wallet. And the guy had already seen it. He had never seen card to wallet before. And, he'd seen me do it earlier. He's like, do that one you did to Thomas earlier. And I'm like, okay, you know. So I'm doing it for his other friend there. And somehow, I don't know what happened, but I reached to my wallet and I pull out the card. But the card, it's the signed card from the previous trick from his other friend. Now, I totally screwed this up. I somehow, I actually really lost the card, you know. Excuse me. So I'm thinking, oh my God, what are you going to do? Well, the looks on both of their faces were like, you know, what's going on? But, well, the guy was like, hey, wait a minute. That's Thomas's card. That's not her card. And I just happened to glance at the bottom of the deck, Nathan, and there was their card. So I thought,
oh, cool.
Thank you, magic god. You know, they were shining onto me. So I just did a quick little switch, but I played it off. And I was like, well, here, wave your hand over the card. Da, 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 you know,
awesome,
and,
man.
And then, you know, pulled it off. And then the guy looks at me like, oh, you had me. You really had me there for a minute. I thought you meant, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So you talk about those magic gods. Sometimes they do. They
oh, yeah, man. Oh, my favorite. And we were talking about Denny, and this is Denny had my favorite magic god story. So his shop in Baltimore, they had a pig, this giant, hairy, it was called Baby, or Babe, rather. And it would just sort of, you know, roll through the shop and whatnot. And there was this old couch that was kind of distressed at the front of the shop. And one afternoon, Babe's sleeping on the couch. And the couch, where it is, you can walk in the door and not see the couch, not see what's on the couch. And so this random lady comes in from the bus stop outside, and she looks around, and Denny's, you know, chain smoking behind the counter. And she says, oh, it's a magic shop. Do you do magic? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, can you do some magic for me? And then he takes a drag. He's like, what kind of magic do you want me to do? And she's like, could you make an animal appear? And he doesn't stop there. He doesn't stop there. He says, well, what kind of animal do you want to appear? She says, can you make a pig appear?
Oh my God.
He doesn't hesitate. He doesn't break. He just takes another, his bored puff on his cigarette. Like, now he's going to do the appearing whatever animal you want trick one more time. And he starts quivering, and he's speaking in tongues, and he's shaking, and his hands are shaking, and he comes up, claps over his head, and he just points behind her. And she turns around, and there's a pig sleeping on the couch behind her. Magic gods, baby. They're a real thing.
Oh, man, dude. That's the greatest story. That is the greatest story right there. That was oh, man. That lady, I'm sure that lady, yeah, that screwed her up or something. That's just, she believes in everything now. So there it is. Oh man, dude, that is awesome. Now let me ask you this, because, you know, now Denny, he passed away how many years ago? It's been a couple of years, right?
It's been a couple. It's been 4 or 5, so it would have been 2018 or 2017, I want to say. I think 2017. So it's been about 5 years.
Yeah. And, you know, it's always, you know, it's sad when you start seeing all these great minds and stuff that are, you know, leaving us. Like, we just recently, you know, Max Maven. And, you know, big fan of Max Maven. Gosh, you know, everything. You know, did you ever have? I had the opportunity to meet Max, but unfortunately, I had to take a gig. I had to take work and I wasn't
sure.
Seeing.
Sure.
And I'm so unfortunate. I never got to meet Max. Did you ever get to meet Max?
Yeah, we had lunch at the Pink Pepper in Hollywood. The first week I ever worked the castle, and he was probably the brightest person I've ever been around. And also, you know, and so there's this very like intimidating air, right? And for people who haven't met him, this was a guy who, you know, kind of looked like Count Dracula on stage, right? And he had the big widow's peak at his height, you know, in his younger days, and sort of a Fu Manchu kind of facial hair, and he was very sharp-witted, and so he could really put people in their place at points. And so it was very intimidating and very kind of, you know, whatever. And underneath that, just a warm, generous, kind person who deeply cared about other people. And we were talking about it, and I hadn't realized this. He was really into kind of making diverse casts for the big convention shows that he was booking in like the 80s and 90s for you know, FISM, the Fédération Internationale Société de Magie, the big international magic conference that he was booking talent for at a time. And the work he did to make sure that it wasn't just white dudes, and that it also wasn't just like token bookings, that it was, you know, that he was finding people from around the world with very diverse backgrounds who were really freaking good at what they were doing. And that it's the kind of thing that, you know, he didn't talk about publicly, wasn't talked about publicly as part of his thing, but it was one other piece of Max that he really cared about the community, and he really cared about lifting up people who were doing good work. And I think that's the flip side of, you know, Max was known as kind of like the human encyclopedia. Like, he was the guy that you're working on a trick and you're like, hey, has anybody come up with this before? And you might get a very efficient email. His emails were to the point, clear, you know, he did not waste time. And was incredibly generous, because I'm sure he got who knows how many of these over the year, in a week, in a day, from people all over, you know, kind of demanding his time for this. But you would get an email back that would be like, oh, that goes back to 1795 with Galasso. And he was deeply knowledgeable. And I think that knowledge was an act of love for the people who had created before him. I think it was an act of, you know, really caring about where does this stuff come from, and who are these people, and what are we building upon. And the flip side of that was sometimes people would look at his work, which was, and this is one of the contradictions of Max, like, he was really grounded in the history, he really knew his stuff, he built on solid ground, but he was also incredibly innovative and incredibly creative. And people would look at his work, and because he was so clear about who the sources were, right, the credits list would be this long, they would think, oh, it's nothing new or something, when what he's contributing was really fresh and really bold. And just having the courage in the 70s to make the choices, to dress the way he did, to make that clear artistic choice, to be super vulnerable. But he was just absolutely brilliant. And you know, you talk to him, and these, and Teller's kind of similar, you know, in the sense that, and I haven't, yeah, I've only had, you know, I happened to, in a large group setting, have dinner with Teller with a bunch of other people once in 2011, but both of them, these sentences will come out of their mouths that are like, I would spend hours wordsmithing, you know, like just spontaneously out of this mouth. There's this beautiful sentence that very clearly expresses this complex idea. And so just deeply intelligent, really passionate, really different, really set out to do good original work, and somebody who could be unapproachable in appearance and stuff, but was really a very warm, loving teddy bear, you know, underneath those kind of outer layers.
You know, what was one of the very impressive things about Max Maven, besides the fact of how knowledgeable and super talented the guy was with, you know, the material and stuff that he cranked out there, but his performance. I mean, when you watched him perform, the character of Max Maven, that, just like you explained it, the magical Dracula kind of look that he gave, you know, I mean, that he created a magical moment just by seeing him, just his appearance alone. And it was, you know, you don't see somebody with that much talent that often. You know what I mean?
No.
So.
And yeah, those clear choices, and then the material itself, he was so good at setting up an ending. He was so good at, you know, and my favorite, you know, David Riegel talks about this idea of predictable surprise, right? Like something can happen that's a huge surprise, but it's theatrically interesting if it's a big surprise, and then afterwards driving home, you're like, well, that's the only way it could have happened, right? It just feels so logical, but you don't see it, you're so caught up in the moment. And Max's thing with one hand in the pocket.
Oh, God.
If you, yeah, and it's so, you know, somebody was talking about it almost being like a Hitch, almost like a, excuse me, not a Hitchcock episode, a, oh, my brain is off, in the 60s, The Twilight Zone. That it was like a brilliantly written Twilight Zone episode that was this perfect circle. And that's, you know, that's another layer of Max's work. Like he really saw the big picture, and he made really cool things that were very different, and he also conveyed this deep respect for the people who'd come before.
Now, let me ask you this, because this is something that, you know, as I've gotten older as a magician, and I wonder if all magicians actually have this thought or this wonder as they get older with their act and their show. Okay.
Sure.
I'm sure there's been plenty that have died and tucked secrets with them to the grave. But I don't think I want to do that, Nathan. I think, you know what I mean? I mean, like, there's things I look at my show and I'm like, no one has a clue, really, truly, the insights to that routine except me. So if and it's such and you love the routine, you know, there's routines in your show that you love them, and you're like, it would be a bummer that this dies with me when I go, you know. So it's all, have you ever thought about maybe or maybe printing some of your material, or just, I don't know, you may have it in a notebook, you may have everything, I don't know.
I don't have everything, and my notebooks are like, if I was starting over, man, my notebooks would be so much more organized. But it's like it's funny, I don't work through like one notebook at a time. So I have a bunch of notebooks where it's like, here's a note from 2007, here's a note from 2014, here's a note from, and they're all like half finished, you know. So it's very hard to find, but it's also very exciting to then go through and like, but to your question about preserving the material, yes, a lot of my stuff though, I have work on it. I have things that I've contributed that are mine, and I have, but most of my work is on the presentational end. Like most of my work is writing comedy presentations for this classic plot and massaging the method to be as strong as it can be with the knowledge I have. But I'm not like creating new methods. I'm not like, you know, so I'm, and a lot of people, we're in this interesting period for parlor and stand-up magic where a ton of it is being published, and a lot of people are realizing that, and so they're all kind of putting down their own book. And I don't, you know, I knock on wood, I hope I have many more years of
And
actually
me too, you and me
doing
both.
this stuff on the road. Totally. So I don't know. I mean, when, you know, when it feels more like, okay, here's my stuff. Yeah, I would like to, before I go, I would like to do a book that chronicles the material. But I'm also,
Well,
so
I'm
yes
not
is
cranking
the
mine out until I'm old and crusty, like super old and crusty, and
yeah.
you know, I can't do anything anymore. And I'm like,
Sure.
okay,
But dude, we're gonna be performing to the, you know us. Like we're both,
that's
we're
what I'm
addicts,
like.
man. I know that. We're gonna be, I hope, knock on wood. I mean, I want to be doing what Billy McCombe was doing, and
Oh
you know,
God, yes, dude.
like
Oh God,
you know, making jokes about being in the nursing home and then fitting, because you know, so.
I just, you know, and I can't picture doing anything else. So, you know, that was, you know, that I know exactly. Yeah, definitely Billy McCombe, you know. Gosh, I mean, how old was he? Because
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know off the top of my
he
head,
was, I mean,
but
he was old dude. He was doing
And
it.
he used it, and he worked for, you know, he was
Yes.
opening for Amazing Jonathan's audiences, and these kids expecting this young, hip, edgy comedian, and he made it work, right? Like,
Oh, he was great, man. He was absolutely great. Well, let me ask you this, because you know, because you know, comedy and magic. So let's, who is your who would you say was your probably your biggest influence in comedy magic? Let's say, you know, true traditional comedy magic.
Yeah. Biggest influence. Here's the problem. There's so many, right?
There's so many.
Like, there's so many, and there's so many, and we're blessed by that, right? We're
yes.
really, really blessed like that. I think Steve Spill is somebody being able to mix like.
God, he's great, bro.
He's great. But he's one of the few who's kind of mixing sort of traditional monologue, like stand up, which is with the magic. It's not just situational. And that's been a big influence on me, where there are parts of my act now where it is like a stand up monologue. And so that's been a big influence. A big influence for me, the Raspini brothers, jugglers, Barry Friedman and Dan Holtzman, and just the way you can play with objects, right? Hey, we'll do this with a garden weasel. We'll do this with that has you think about what are the possibilities with the props that you're using. And Penn and Teller to a phenomenal extent with that. They had published in one of their early books a cut and restored snake. And so live snake. And so that idea of, okay, let's take this plot, but what other objects could make this? And my friends at the Toronto Magic Company, Jonah Babbins and Ben Train, just did in a big way with the watermelon on Fool Us, which had a traditional classic kind of magic-y method, but they wrote it around this prop in a wonderful way that made it make sense. And just, I think everybody who watched that was like, why didn't I think of that? Including Penn, you know?
First of all, what you just said, that's the greatest thing that an entertainer, I think, can ever say to another entertainer when they see something, you know what I mean? Because that just means, and you know, you mentioned Steve Spiel at the beginning, you know, I got to say he was a big influence on me too, because that is my style. I do stand up mixed with magic and, you know, seeing somebody, you know, like I said, he's just phenomenal, especially when you go back and watch some of his older stuff, you know, and it's like, God, this is great. And you know what, man, I want to give Ben Train, dude, big props here for a minute, because
absolutely.
Ben was, I had been on as a guest, and Ben has an aura of funny just all around him. And I don't even know if Ben realizes this. I told Ben, I said, Ben, there's some guys that got to work at the funny, you know what I mean? You can be funny, but Ben has got, you know, he's got a little bit of a natural, and I love it.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
It's, I think of it as like comedy atmosphere. Like there's certain people who their rhythm of speaking or their appearance or whatever, it makes you ready to laugh.
Absolutely.
Like you're set up to laugh in a way that is easier. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you know, I love, and I just saw the preview. I need to go watch but I did see with the thing with the melon and the string, so I need to go check that out.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and you can see what they've really come through with what they did with virtual and starting to perform as a duo, and like they're making that work, you know. And Ben's got that, you know, and Jonah has that too, but Jonah's more the straight man there.
Yeah,
you know, you've got this, so there's a nice little tension, you know,
which, a classic
which works with a duo, you know.
Well, now, so now you're in Orlando now, correct? That's where you're, you know, primarily at. Now, is that a pretty big? I'd say that's a pretty busy place for magic.
It's a busy place for magic, and we have an incredible community here because, for whatever reason, like there are just some amazing. We've got like two IBM Gold Cups winners at least.
Nice.
Steve Bedwell and Giovanni Lavera are here. Michael Amar, Coach Chick Kimlott. Just an incredible community of, there's a ton of talent, which had me cracking up because one day, and we've become friends, that I've come to know this gentleman, but one day I pull up and there's this like beat up like truck in front of me, and it has Orlando's number one magician. And I'm saying to my girlfriend, I'm like, if that's not either an IBM Gold Cup winner, you know, TC Tahoe, who's won how many, you know, Magic Castle Magician of the Year awards, if it's not one of those guys, we're gonna have a conversation. But yeah, we have immense talent in this area, and talent. There's talent like that that like people within magic have heard of, and there are also people doing really wonderful things that you might not have. So for the past 20 years, Tony Brent has been hosting the Out of Control Comedy Magic Dinner Show at Wonderworks, and it is this fantastic, hilarious, high energy show in kind of a challenging room and kind of a challenging environment. That you got to see if you're here. We have the Great Magic Hall, which is this crazy venue where I've done, I did 700 shows from April 2021 until I left for Hawaii in February this year. So in less than a year, did 700 shows there. And that's a space. So Jaffa, who was on that same Penn and Teller Fool Us episode, right, doing a wonderful Zone Zero thing, and Terry Ward, who's the only magician Disney has hired for over 30 years as a full-time magician, was John Armstrong's teacher. They perform there. And it's this really cool space where people come in, there's a parlor, you do a little parlor show for them, right, of about 10 minutes. Secret door opens, you bring them into a room for close-up that's kind of like the castle's sort of, you know, modeled-ish on the castle's close-up gallery, and then they come into a room that's a big stage with full theatrical lighting, and I just saw Drew Thomas there doing some incredible stuff with, you know, Drew does incredible stuff with live production and live video, and just but perfectly lit and beautifully designed and thought out, and perfect music to enhance everything. So yeah, we've got a really dynamic scene here in Orlando for
that
sure.
That sounds awesome. Definitely next time I'm in that area, I've got to contact you and
yeah, man, let's hang for sure, and we'll meet the folks. Yeah.
Well, I mean, being in Orlando, like I said, you're around of a lot of talent too. And, you know, and you're very talented, which I think, you know, I think it's important to surround yourself around talent. You know what I mean? Like,
you gotta raise the bar.
Yeah,
absolutely. You gotta have a sense of, you know, there's that cliche of you're the average of the five people you spend the most time around and whatever. But I think there's truth to that, because we set our expectations relative to other people. And I think other people make us want to be better. And they set a, you know, and I have a big thing, and I don't know the answer to it, but I think, and you're probably familiar with this, my limited interactions in the stand-up culture, I think the culture of stand-up is probably, there are things about it that I'm sure are off-putting and, you know, a little toxic and all that stuff, but it's a culture that makes people want to be better.
Oh,
right? It makes people want to be original, makes people want to write your own stuff. And magic, for whatever reason, and maybe it's because it started with, you know, it's such a consumer-based thing. Here, I'm going to sell you this thing, and if you buy this, you'll be amazing. And that's how we start. But we don't have that. We don't have an expectation of originality. We don't have a – and so, I mean, I think one way of getting there, and whether it's about originality or just being good, just doing good stuff, is to be around people who are doing great things.
I totally agree. And, you know – gosh, you know, I could do a whole lecture on that topic if you want to know the truth.
Sure, sure.
But this is how I had to break it down with magicians is now, Nathan, everything in my show, except now I do a rope routine, which we're all familiar with, but it's my own jokes, you know, everything I've written with it. But a lot of the routines in my show are my take on classic routines.
Sure.
Know? And I was like, how can I make, you know, this mine? Now, the of course, the stand-up and comedy, all 100%, you know, me. And it is possible for magicians to do this. Magicians, because we've known plenty that have, like, we're like, wow, I've never seen anybody do it this way before. Or, And now whenever I do watch a magic act, I really don't care if it fools me or not. But if it's something cleverly twist on something that I haven't seen, I fall in love with that immediately.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 1,000%.
But I do think the one thing that's a little different, a little bit challenging with magicians is, okay, if we compare us to, you know, straight comics, well, you know, their material, they've got access to more material than anything because it's happening around you constantly. But then you look at a musician who will cover a song, and if they play that song, if they put their heart into that song and cover it there, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
there's
yeah,
something
yeah.
special there. So I think magicians, we fall in between there somewhere, you know, like,
well, I mean, Teller's example, which is really good, but and describes magicians at a very high level who are, and there are people doing that, who write their own material, who write their own magic too, like it's the presentation and the magic is theirs and everything. But he compares it to, it's like if you were composing a song, but you had to build the instrument for the song and write the music and perform it, and the instrument you could only use for that one song.
Yeah, that's right? So true.
And it's the perfect analogy, yeah. 1,000% And a stand-up can go out and try out a line and, you know, oh, that didn't work so well, so they can cut it, whatever. And whereas we fall in love with, we have to do a certain amount of R&D and, you know, like working around before anybody can see it and spending money on it. And so, like, a lot of people stick with ideas too long because...
Oh, my God, yeah.
The sunk cost fallacy, you know, you put so much into it.
You know, I've got the one thing, you know, I mean, nothing is ever a masterpiece. Everything is always still getting better, you know.
Well, you need to see my show. Yeah, well, 100%, 100%.
I tell people, you know, because sometimes people ask me how do I come up with my material and things I do. A lot of times what I'll do is I write a joke first. I will write a bit first. And then I think, what piece of magic would go mm-hmm. brilliantly with this? And then it gets everything kind of turning and moving. Because I mean, another issue is what, like, I know there's probably a lot of guys out there in magic who maybe want to be a little better at adding comedy in their act, but there's sometimes you got to be careful the way, you know, we were talking about doing the stand-up portion is because it can feel forced in a mm-hmm. in a magic act. You know, your crowd can stop and be like, well, what the hell going on, he's talking about this now, you know. So there's a way you have to do it and blend it in and work it in, and you know, it's almost like, you know, your audience has to know who you are.
Yeah, yep, 1,000%. And it's all tension and release, both magic yes. and comedy. And that's what's Absolutely. So that's what's so beautiful about mixing them, is you get the different textures of releasing tension in different ways and at different times, but you got to know what you're doing to get those waves to add up, because they can cancel each other out just as much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, you know, every guest on the Abracadam podcast gets asked this question, Nathan. So I have to ask you this, and I know being a performer, I know you probably have plenty of these. I know you do, but we have to hear it. Let's hear a good hell gig story.
Oh, man, I'll give you, here's, and it's too bad this happened years ago, because right after it, I wrote down all the details and I can't find the details. 2015, I don't even know where to start with this one. So it's a corporate, and it's local, it's in town, it's in Orlando. The day before, I get in a car accident. I get T-boned, but it's on the passenger side. I'm fine, but I need to get the car into the shop, get it taken care of in the morning, get a rental car, rent a car, all that stuff, and then head to the show, which already kind of throws me off, right? Because we've all got a timeline, or I've got a timeline. It's very important to me that this happens at this time, this happens at this time. So everything's in order for a show. So whatever, we get there, load all my stuff in. I've got my suit still in the car. But when I go back out, the rental car keys are locked in the car, because I had a code on my old car where I could get in. So I just throw the keys in, whatever. So that's fine, whatever. And trying to jimmy it or whatever, I get the alarms blaring. So the alarms blaring in the hotel parking lot, the agent and the client the agent comes out to help wait for the locksmith to get it up. Time's going by. We're at the point where I absolutely have to be changed. So finally, locksmith pops it. I grab the suit, say thank you so much, run into the hotel. I've already paid him, right? And they can't turn off the alarm, so the alarm keeps going because the keys aren't actually found. So that's happening. On top of that, this client had said they were having an awards, and they said, you know, we really need the stage to be completely clear for our awards. We don't want any of your stuff set up. So I was like, okay, will there be time? Is there gonna be a natural break between the awards and the, yeah, we'll just, you know, we'll let a 10-minute break happen. And then, you know, you and the hotel staff will set the show up and then you'll do it. Sounds great. Me and the agent come out of the green room to hang in the back of the room to watch and see where they are in the progress of the dinner, right? Where are they? It's about 45 minutes before I'm supposed to go on. A guy who's giving a speech who I've never met before, nobody checked in with me to say, when are you starting? Anything else? Suddenly says, and ladies and gentlemen, we've got a surprise for you. Please welcome the magic of Nathan Comarsh.
Oh my God, of course.
In the middle of the meal, they're eating. Nothing is set up. Everything is backstage, right? I happen to be changed. I happen to be mic'd up already. So I say, well, ladies and gentlemen, we've got an incredible show for you, but we want you guys to be able to enjoy a little bit more of your food. I'm going to let the team from the Renaissance here get everything set up. And we start in about 10 minutes. So there's this weird like opening. They introduce me and then like, you know, so whatever. So I'm rushing to set stuff up. And I'm trying in my head, I'm trying to slow down, right? I'm trying to, because I know, and you know how it is with magic, and for people who aren't magicians, if there's something that's set out of way, 8 minutes of your show can be absolutely thrown out the window because that one little thing isn't in the spot where it's supposed to be, right? But a little stressed out, there are people who are like, you know, looking over, when's it gonna start? Can we start soon? Can we start soon, you know? So get everything set up, come on. Nothing is, several things I've missed in the setup as I'm doing that. So I come out and my opener is still backstage. So like the prop I'm using in the opening piece is the part that I left out. So I start with something new and throughout, like just, it was one of those nights where everything that could go wrong would go wrong and it cascaded down. And it ended up being a, like the client, the show like ended up getting a solid reaction, and that was a point of pride for me at that time. Like you notice as a performer, like the more you go on, the disastrous circumstances, it's not about how high the highs are, right? It's about raising the level of the lows. It's about when you suck, how much do you bomb? And like when you hit that point, and you hit a certain point where every time you go out, the product is at a certain level here, right? That's when you're really where you need to be as a professional. So you know that it, when you haven't slept, when the clothes have been packed in the car, when they introduce you and none of your stuff is set up, when
that's right,
you know, all of those things, it's about that. So, and there have been many of those nights, you know, like with all of us, and they all kind of blur together, you know, all kinds of different stuff. But there was a night me and was doing an Armed Forces Entertainment tour with Christian and Catalina, who are phenomenal, with Jason Michaels, who was just on Fool Us, did a phenomenal bit from Tennessee as well, mm-hmm. from your hood. We're checking, we're in the Miami airport, and we're staying near the Miami airport rather. And so we're checking on, you know, what'll be good food. And we find this Indian place that has all these 5-star reviews. And we're like, okay, this is awesome. Let's go there. So we walked there and we're a little confused because there's like, and the Uber driver who brings us there, we actually Ubered, is like, are you sure you want to get off here? And that should have been the first hint, right? So it's this really run down, like abandoned motel, and there's an Indian restaurant, and we walk in and the guy's like, you know, welcome. He's so excited we're here. And he's like, mango lassis for everybody. So before we can like look around and like back at, you know, he's got these mango lassis out for all of us. And me and Christian Painter ordered the same dish. And that night I'm like, man, why is it so cold in this room? It's so cold and I'm shivering. And long story short, I get food poisoning. Christian gets food poisoning. And we're flying the next day to we're doing a show we were in Miami overnight before a show at a military base in the Bahamas that where we were performing was just like a bar that's unair conditioned on a beach, you know. So long story short, we're both flying in this very small jet with food poisoning. And then right before the show, we're in stalls next to each other with everything coming out. And we're just, you know, through the stalls, glamorous showbiz, baby. And as you know, what's interesting is then you see the stage doctor and your body does this weird thing where once you hit the stage, it's just whatever's going on, it prioritizes your being on stage and you do your thing and you get through it and it's fine. And then afterwards, whatever it was hits you 10 times harder because you've been expending all this energy to keep it at bay. So those are two that pop immediately to mind. But
yeah. But you are so right too, because you know, whenever that moment that's where you really realize where you are, is whenever everything does go wrong, and or something, and you still pull through it, or if you're feeling like. You're feeling like hell, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you still, it's what we do. You turn it on.
That's the job, man. You know, you just got divorced. Your mom died. You're whatever. Like, you know, yeah. You're for those people, your job is to make them feel happy and fun, and you need to be happy and fun. And that can be a challenge. Yeah.
So. That's, and maybe you think that's why you're, good performers are always great actors, it seems like, a lot of times, you know, because I mean, and yeah, I'm saying we're great performers, Nathan.
Oh yeah, baby.
Yeah. when you think about it, you know, it's like you go into that, I guess you want to call it a character, but it's an extension of yourself. But I mean, you are in a good mood. You're there having fun. You're on stage and you're wanting that to be contained.
You're present. Yeah, exactly. You're and that's the thing, is all that other stuff that's going on. I mean, it's you know, your classic mindfulness, Zen meditation, whatever. It's all letting go of that stuff and being fully present, whatever's going on. And that's what makes you a good performer. And that's what people come to us for. 1,000%. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely.
All right. Well, that was definitely no spicy Indian food again for you. I love Indian food, but probably not the best thing to eat right before a plane ride gig like that. Let's do this. Okay, I got to ask you this. This is a question. And I know you are a man of science and you are a man of rational thinking. I know this, Nathan. I know this about you already, brother. I already know. But I'm going to drop one on you, man, okay? Because I do have conspiracy theorists on this. I have alien believers and ghost belief. And I know you. I know you're Captain Rational, but I'm going to ask you anyways. If you were abducted by aliens, if they flew right over in Orlando, zipped down, sucked Nathan up, and they demanded to see a magic trick.
Oh, baby.
What magic trick would you do to impress the aliens?
Well, hey, man, another tribute to Max. Wave. Everybody does it. And there's a reason for that. It's in under 15 seconds. It builds. It's got this great rhythm to it. It's got it, you know, it has this thing where you're like, oh, I was impressed with that. Oh, I'm really impressed with that. Oh, you know, it has this escalation to it and this rhythm, and it's absolutely perfect. So, and for people who may not be familiar, so somebody imagines imagines that they're holding on to four cards wrapped in a rubber band, which is easy for them to do because they are. And you have them imagine one of those queens facing the other direction, and you pull the rubber band off, and whatever queen they're imagining is the one that's facing the other direction.
It is a very trick.
And sometimes people see that and they think, well, Magic Boy's just really good with his hands. And to disprove that, it's the only one that's from a totally different deck. There were no queens to begin with other than the one that they just happened to imagine in the moment. It's absolutely powerful, absolutely unforgivable. And the legacy of our friend Max Maven.
Dude, that is awesome. And let me just say this. I'm going to give a quick pointer. Guys, know that Nathan Comarsh is an amazing entertainer, because you see the way he brought that back full circle to Max Maven. That's how you know right there. That was amazing. I tell you what, Nathan, before we get out of here, brother, will you tell the Abracadam listeners where they can learn more about you, maybe catch a show?
Yeah, absolutely. Best is you can find me on Instagram at Nathan_Co_Marsh or NathanComarsh.com.
Awesome, brother. Well, Nathan, man, this has been a blast, dude. I always love talking to you. And hey, thanks for coming on.
A pleasure, man.
Damn, with Nathan Comarsh. I tell you what, man, if you guys get a chance to check out Nathan's show, definitely check it out. I would go right over to his website, NathanComarsh.com, to check out any show dates. Like I said, Nathan is a great dude and a very, very good entertainer and a fantastic magician.
Like always, Abracadamits, if you can, be sure to follow the Abracadam podcast on whatever platform it is you listen to podcasts on. We are everywhere. Also, check us out on the Facebook page, the Abracadam Facebook page. Give us a like, a follow. We post these episodes there, plus a little video content. So definitely check us out there. And also, give me a follow at DannyWitsonMagicAndComedy.com and on Instagram at SuperMagicBoy. And like always, Abracadamits, thank you for listening.
Freaking miracle. There you go.